All right, so time for another ranting and raving episode on different topics.
Well, I enjoyed the last one. I thought the last one of these we did turned out really well.
I don't remember what we spoke about.
I don't either. I mean, I'm not gonna remember. I don't know. I guess it was the feeling of it. It felt like, oh, it wasn't like I wasn't a complete disaster on the last one, so it must have turned out pretty good.
That's the bar that we're using right now, right? That's the metric
Yeah.
we're using. It wasn't a complete disaster, so we'll do it again.
That's usually my bar. I don't know if I need to adjust my bar at all, but anyway, on our last episode, we talked with Moneta Wilson, and I really love talking with Moneta. And Moneta is obviously a yoga teacher, so I thought we would start off by digging into our yoga experiences because it sounds like we both have experience with yoga.
Yeah, I actually, there's many times in my life where I thought of doing the teacher training. I have times when yoga was used against me in the sense that I went to see a doctor. I was having some depression and mental health issues, and he was like, "Oh, just go do yoga, go do more yoga." And I'm like, "How is that? That's not helping me. That was not helping me." Just completely dismissive in that sense. But I mean, he was Indian, so it was interesting because he was telling me to do something that would have been culturally appropriate and made sense. But I'm pretty sure that my mental health was not going to be cured by more yoga. There was a point in my life where I was doing it daily, and I was doing it so much that your body starts to crave it. Like when you do it, if you don't do it, then you're like, it's like exercise. Well, I hear that for people. That doesn't happen to me. It doesn't happen to me with traditional exercise, but with yoga, it did. It was actually my sister that went ahead and got her teacher training out of, it was kind of surprising to me. So my sister's a certified yoga instructor. And yeah, I guess my experience with yoga is from the outside of watching her do her certification and what it was like for her and her practice. So I don't really do yoga much anymore, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, you're as usual one or two steps ahead of me. The idea of even getting a teacher certification in yoga is not something my mind can comprehend. But yeah, I've done yoga on and off over the years, and I think it's been helpful, but certainly it's not like go do yoga to help your mental health is not like, or cure your mental health woes is doesn't sound like a good idea, but I'm wanting to do it for probably two reasons lately, and they probably contradict one another. So it's, yeah. So the first one is because I want to get back to running in marathons, and I'm hoping that yoga can help with that because my body is not holding up at all. Nowhere even close. It breaks down so quickly. So I'm hoping maybe yoga can help with that in terms of like stretching my body so it'll last a lot longer than it does. And I think the other thing is like, I don't know for you, Kelly, but as I've gotten older, my muscles are just so tight. Like every part of my body is just incredibly tight. My upper body, my lower body. So hearing Moneta talk about chair yoga last time, I'm kind of really interested in that idea because I have a tendency to do more, to do more, to do more, and I don't think that's the approach I need to be taking as I'm 40, 45 now. Yes, I'm 45. Yes.
Think
After
about that.
I got to do like the math or stuff, you know. It's like a math problem now. Like, okay. So I've been definitely thinking about like how can yoga be helpful to a certain extent to my physical and my mental health?
Yeah, I think to me, like yoga is largely mental. It's about kind of being in your body. And they say that, and it sounds so easy, but it's not because I think we're constantly judging ourselves. We're constantly judging our bodies. And the positions are physical, but they're really meant to test you, I think, more mentally. Sometimes it's about letting go, like you said, that tightness you have learning your limits, learning when to let go, learning it just to kind of push it a little bit further to kind of challenge yourself, but then also relax into it at the same time. It's like, it is an art, right? It's totally an art form in that sense. I was going to ask, do you get like runner's high? Do you get that? Like when you're doing marathons, like what prompted you or provoked you or pushed you into doing marathons? Because it's something like, I think it's interesting, but I don't think I would enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite part of running, I always say, is when it's over. So there's that.
But why did you start?
Why did I start? Well, I was 19 and I started running. And
so not that smart, no.
So it was a long time ago. And, you know, I started out, I would run 20 or 30 minutes at a time. And then one day, I guess I got a runner's high that day, and I ended up running for like 40 minutes or something like that. And I was like, oh, wow, I really enjoyed that. That gave me some positive feelings. And when I was done with that, the run that day, and this is kind of the story of my life, after running 40 minutes one time in my life, I said, oh, I think I'm going to run a marathon now. Definitely a little delusional, definitely some executive functioning where there's a lot of steps to take from running 40 minutes one time to finishing a marathon. But yeah, that was kind of the story of my initial running a marathon.
So that was the folly of youth.
For sure. For sure. It was okay. The folly of youth. I could eat anything I wanted at that time. I didn't have to worry about as much about recovering. Like if I tried to run for a longer period of time today, it would probably be a week of recovery from that versus I could probably go out the next day when I was 19, 22, or my last marathon was at when I was 28. So yeah, so things have definitely changed since then.
But you see, I see marathons as largely mental as well. As everybody that I've heard kind of describe it, you're pretty much just, your brain is basically forcing your body to just kind of keep going. That's how you get it done. So
I think there's a lot of good things I learned from marathons and a lot of bad things. And I think I, you know, kind of trace this back to learning that I'm autistic, is that the good part is like you kind of learn to like take things one step at a time. Like the training process, you just don't run a marathon. And if you do, you're probably not going to finish, or bad things can potentially happen if you don't take your training seriously. So you kind of learn like, okay, there's going to be some good days. There's going to be some bad days. Ultimately, things fall onto you, although you can get support from other people in the process. But ultimately, that process depends on you. So I think those are some like great things you can learn. You can learn about your body. You can learn about what to eat and what not to eat. Hydrating yourself. All those things are great things. I think the bad thing about it is pushing yourself to an extent that is very likely to lead to autistic burnout or get into like deeper cycles of that. So while I love running and I think marathon running is wonderful and there's lots of good things you can learn from it, I think there's, as autistic people, I think there's things that we need to be really concerned about in that process and be aware of.
Yeah. I think that's why I have no interest in it. It fascinates me as in terms of just like human nature and understanding how people do it. And I actually signed up for a 5K run once. I never showed up, but I signed up for it. So that was the closest I ever got to being in a marathon. I could never like, and always early in the morning, I'm not a morning person. I could never like get myself to get up and get dressed. I probably could have done it. I used some zombie chasing me app kind of thing to get me the training.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Couch to 5K or something like that?
Sure. Mean,
one of those things. And it had zombies chasing you. So like it's... Like, that's the only way that I can, like, really get myself to run, like to motivate myself to run, I'm either running after someone or I'm being chased. So those are the only two really scenarios where I'm going to run.
Well, one, I know you could do it. And two, I feel that races are not very inclusive, I guess, like the rest of our society. Like you said, they're early in the morning, a lot of time at the beginning of the races, near the starting line, it's like a crowd of people, and they'll play mu and they play music and things like that, and it can be really loud and overwhelming in those spaces. So yeah, if you ever do run a 5K race, which I know you could start and finish, I will be interested in your feedback on the accessibility and the how inclusive or not inclusive that experience was for you.
Yeah, Kelly takes 2 hours.
It doesn't matter. We all run our own race, so.
You know, when I was a kid, I remember now we did 1 and 2K races back around Mount Royal, around the hill when we were small in elementary school. But we trained for that. The teachers actually had us running around the school at lunch and doing laps and things to do it. And that was fun. That was actually fun.
Yeah.
Had the little pinny and everything. So that was fun. But yeah.
So this conversation kind of leads into something I think we wanted to talk about today, which was self-care.
Yes. So what's your self-care? What's your so I can tell you, like, I'll share what my actual, like, the probably one of the only physical activities I do with self-care is my kayaking. I love to kayak. I've got two kayaks now. So they're inflatable kayaks, so I can pretty much take them anywhere I want. It's more controlled by weather and then my schedule. So, like, I do try to get out, but we've had a really rough summer so far because we had forest fires, the air quality was bad. Then we had some sort of crazy hailstorm. Sorry, not crazy, just wild. And then we had a tornado last week on Thursday. So it's not really kayaking weather. But yeah, knowing that you have to kind of schedule those things in, otherwise work or other stuff will envelop it, swallow it up.
Well, for me, when I think about self-care, I think about autistic burnout, and I feel like always in burnout to some extent, and I always have to be careful of those cycles. So for me, it's making sure that I've learned a lot about like what works for me and what doesn't, and kind of like signs that I'm starting to go through a bad cycle of burnout, or I'm about to. But what I've learned is making sure I'm not near people as often as possible. I think that helps me to not necessarily go through burnout. I'm in like a cycle right now where I'm having like a lot of meetings and stuff like that that are somewhat unavoidable. So now I'm trying to look at my schedule and seeing how I can like get out of some of those meetings and still things move in a positive direction. So that's definitely a big thing for me. Big thing for me is saying no to a lot of like social engagements. Definitely boundaries with a lot of these things. If I do go to a social engagement, I'm giving very like I'm telling people ahead of time like, hey, I can only be there for an hour, or so. Definitely like planning for these things more. And then also like on a daily basis, I start every day like thinking about like things I'm grateful for. I heard Steve Harvey actually talk about this once and how like that's been a practice for him for like 30 years. And I started trying it. I don't think I do it as well as apparently as Steve Harvey does it. But you know, I think that's like a good starting point for me each day. And then that kind of leads into me meditating for about 15 to 20 minutes each day. And as part of that meditation is like focusing on my breathing. So, and then just remembering to breathe throughout the day. Like I probably need to breathe right now. I've talked too much, and it's your turn, Kelly.
Breathe, breathe.
Yeah.
Yeah, breathing is so important. People don't. I used to have signs up around the house that said breathe. I have my Google Home that's probably going to go off in a minute and tell me that I need to go and wash my hands or take a drink of water or something. Yeah, those kind of reminders to do things, because I think we have to be proactive and we have to kind of be preventative in that sense. Like, I think when people think about self-care, I had one counselor who said, you know, like, if you wait till you're already tired or overwhelmed to do it, it's too late. And not that you shouldn't do it then, but you need to be doing little bits of it more regularly before that happens so that you're not in that state. Yeah, I just spent the last week doing a training from 9 to 5. So I was Monday to Friday in an office with a group of people from 9 to 5. And I am not used to that at all. It has been 5 years since I have done anything 9 to 5 with a group of people, or 9 to 5 at all. So I came out of that. I mean, yes, it was a training too. So there was some learning and braining involved, but I was utterly exhausted. Like, just absolutely drained. Anyway, and I'm still recovering from that. Now it's Monday and I'm getting back into my regular work and stuff. But I think it's really important that we put that putting boundaries around our work life. I had some other projects and I'm just like, yeah, I'm not meeting with you this week. I'm in a training, too bad. So sad. You know, I don't say it like that, but especially as entrepreneurs, but anybody really, but especially as entrepreneurs, it's important to put those strong boundaries around your work and your time and make sure that you have time reserved for your own care. And not just care, like, there's, you know, sleeping, eating. Like, I refuse to have people book me through lunch meetings. I hate that. Don't book me through my meals. Those are my sacred times. Trying to book me in, I don't know, sometimes when they hear, oh, well, you're doing this training, can't you just step out for an hour or 15 minutes and have this call? No, I
Oh,
can't. I'm going to focus on one thing, right? Things like that. So it's funny because I have 2 summer interns this year, and I started out the relationship basically telling them, like, emailing them right off the bat and saying, look, these are my work boundaries. I work within this box. I do have some flexibility, you know, given that I'm trying to manage 2 people. But I encourage them to have their own boundaries and to share those with me and not to be scared to tell me. And anyway, I've asked, so we're trying to make a meeting. We have not actually all 3 of us met together yet because we've been trying to find a time that works for everybody. But when I ask them, when are you available, rather than telling me when they're available, they're telling me when they're working at their other job, when they're not available. And I'm like, that's great, but that shouldn't mean that because you're working 9 to 4 with somebody else, that all the other time outside of that is free for me to book, right? Like, you have to come, there's transit time if you're going to work, you have to eat, you need to do washing, maybe. I don't what. And sometimes you just need to do nothing. That's also part of your day. That should be part of your day, doing absolutely nothing. And so, like, I feel like I must sound nuts to them. I don't know. I'm like, I don't want to be told when you're not available because you're working for someone else. I want to be told when you're available, when all your other priorities have been satisfied, because your work should not be the priority. So what that means, I can book you at 3 o'clock in the morning, or I can book you through your dinner, I can book you through the concert that you got tickets for. Like, what, you know, like, it shouldn't be everything is available. So yeah, we're working through that. Trying to have them understand boundaries. Which also leads me to an interesting conversation. If you want to talk about the Jonah Hill thing, have you heard about this?
No, I
All the
don't
stuff
think.
with Jonah Hill?
No. I have no,
Okay.
I live in a bubble, so I usually have no idea what's going on. Let's talk about
So, yeah, so his wife recently left him. He has gotten into another relationship and had a child with this other woman. And the ex-wife is basically trying to warn the new woman and anybody else that wants to be involved with him about the way that he was controlling. And she has shared text messages and things from him where he basically said, well, she was, or she still is, whatever, she's a professional model and a surfer. You know, she spends a lot of her day by the sea, by the ocean, wearing bikinis, wearing wetsuits, that kind of stuff. She teaches men as well as women. And basically, during their marriage, he had said, I want you to respect my boundaries. And that is, I don't want you to be teaching men. I don't want you to be taking pictures of yourself in swimsuits. And then she's a model. You know, and I don't want you to be having dinner or coffees with women who are unstable or full of drama. That's what, something like that. And he said, these are my boundaries. And those aren't boundaries, though. Those are demands, right? Because a boundary is not what the other person is doing. The boundary is for you. So mm-hmm. he could have said something like, I'm insecure when you take pictures of yourself in a swimsuit, even though I think you're beautiful. You know, he can't say, shouldn't say, don't take pictures of yourself in a swimsuit. He should say, since I'm insecure, I just want you to know and validate that for me, but I need to work on myself, right? It should be like, if you don't stop taking pictures of yourself in swimsuits and posting them, then I'm going to unfollow you on your social media so that I don't see them, or I'm going to go seek therapy, or I'm going to leave you because I can't, I just can't take it. I'm too much of a baby. So yeah, anyway, so it's been this interesting debate on social media over like boundaries and what they actually are and what they're not. And it's interesting to see how different people are siding with him. I obviously don't. I think they were demands. They were controlling and they were demands. And if he really was that insecure, he should, I mean, they should have just parted ways ages ago rather than him try to tell her what she should wear or what she should do.
So this is intersection. So I'm just curious, like in this situation, like with boundaries, where do you see the intersection of boundaries and autonomy?
Again, the boundary is what you need to do for yourself, for your own health, right? So it allows people, you can express it and you can still say that you're insecure or that you're whatever it is, but you're only responsible for yourself. Other people are other people. So I think, how do I express this? You know, it's kind of like allowing other people to be autonomous as much as you need to be autonomous, right? It's the kind of thing like where you say, like, if you keep calling me the B word, I'm going to leave you. That's a boundary. That's what you're going to do about it. It doesn't stop the person. It doesn't stop the other person from calling you whatever they want to call you. And that's where that, I think, where that line is, in my opinion, right? So the other person can still do whatever the heck they want. The only thing that changes is what you're going to do in return about it. Yeah.
I get so concerned about my own autonomy, but I also get concerned about placing demands or requests that restrict other people's autonomy.
I think, look, the case I just brought up, like, let's say your partner is calling you the B word. You know, asking for a certain level of respect to me is not controlling unless you're saying, well, again, unless it's something, unless you make a boundary that doesn't become a boundary that ends up being some point where that you're harming them in some way in retaliation, there's difference. So like, if you say like, if you call me the B word, I'm going to slash your tires.
Yeah.
That's not a boundary. That's a threat. Right?
For sure.
But yeah, if you call me the B word, I'm just going to leave. That's not a threat. I mean, well, you could perceive it as a threat as well, but it's an action that you will take that doesn't, can't say doesn't hurt them, because it could hurt them, but they have a choice too. There's nothing essential, right, about calling somebody that. It's not like, yeah, it's not an essential way of communication. It's not a healthy way of communication. So I think just asking for like a certain level of non-toxicity,
yeah,
a really base level. But I think especially, with, you know, if we're talking about in the context of neurodivergent people, a lot of us come from a lot of trauma, right? And we have a hard time making boundaries. We have a hard time expressing our needs. We get, I think, sometimes too, in our learning to try and express boundaries, we kind of go really far the other way sometimes. And in that effort, we end up kind of going more into the threat level rather than just the regular assertiveness level. And then sometimes I've heard people say, well, I've set this boundary, I've said this, but they still don't listen to me. Mm-hmm. And so they think they kind of just have to repeat it louder, whereas no, actually, you've done it right. The person is not respecting you. So now it's time to cut ties, right? But I think especially as autistic people, we give people so many chances. We give people too many chances sometimes. And that's the sad part, right? Because sometimes that might be one of the only close friendships that we have. And so we kind of hang on to it, and we give a lot more grace than is necessary, to the point where we're actually getting harmed ourselves. So I think there's a line that we have to, we're talking about boundaries, we're talking about not getting hurt by other people, but also about not allowing ourselves to be hurt and not hurting ourselves in the process. And we forget that. I think a lot of people forget that. And even going back to self-care, it's not just the avoidance of things. It's also doing things in a way that we're not bringing harm to ourselves in the process.
It's a learning process.
Oh. Yeah, but yeah, but I think it's something that people forget all the time. Like, I think about another example, we're talking about not just my son, but kids learning to express themselves and learning how to have a healthy debate and a discussion instead of a giant argument, or they start calling you names and things like that. I was saying, you know, just don't take it personally. So yes, I've had my son call me dumb and stupid and things. And it's more about, at this age, at this time, at this level of maturity he has, it's less about the words in his case, and it's more about acknowledging the anger and helping him to learn to express anger in ways that don't hurt other people, but also don't hurt himself. Because with him, he goes from one extreme to the other. He can go from hitting somebody, and then he can go to, like, let's say punching himself. And he hasn't really done that, but let's just, like, use that as an example. And so this understanding that, yes, you can be angry. Yes, you have these emotions, or we're not going to hurt other people. We also deserve not to hurt ourselves. And so how do I, you know, it's about teaching him how he can be angry in ways that don't harm anybody or anything, including himself. And I would even say him first, right? Right. Because especially when people internalize anger, they go to things like cutting and burning and hurting themselves or hitting themselves. That's not healthy either. But we go, well, at least he's not hurting other people. Yes, but you're hurting yourself. So protecting everybody, but putting yourself first, you know?
Yeah. I know we're right now in Disability Pride Month. What are you thinking about this month? Terms of disability pride?
I mean, not much, in the sense of, like, this is, to me, it's really a more of an American thing. I don't see it really recognized here in Canada. So I don't even know. Like, and for us, like, it's kind of smack dab, like, in the middle. It's right after Pride Month. And then the weird thing is that, like, Quebec, or maybe it's just Montreal, I don't know, we celebrate Pride in August. I don't know why. Right. So it's, like, super confusing to me, because we have Pride in June, like, for the rest of the world. And then we have another, like, it feels like another Pride in Montreal in August, which is great for our tourist industry. But anyway, so July is up in the middle of, like, in the middle of this in between. And it just doesn't feel, I don't know. We have a lot of stuff in October. We have, like, Disability Employment Awareness Month in October, which I feel is, like, more recognized or celebrated here. But it's not really a Pride thing. Right? It's hard. All that to say, I feel very confused by it. I haven't made any posts about it. It's not something that I feel that is really celebrated here. Yeah.
That's interesting. I didn't realize it wasn't. So it's not really even, like, a thing in Canada then.
No. Not that I've noticed, no. I mean, maybe I'm out of the loop, but nah.
In our last episode with Monetta, one of the things that she was talking about was accommodations in the workplace and things like that. So I know you were just talking about, like, that working 9 to 5 with people, which sounds really scary. I don't know how anyone could possibly do that and not burn out within 2 weeks. Like, so what do you think about it in regards to, like, even accommodations in that situation and other situations, just not to be dealing with burnout at work?
You know, I've done it in the past. I was really tired. I've done things where there was one workplace prior to the one I had before I started this company where I took Fridays off. I negotiated for Fridays off, which lowered my salary because I was working fewer hours, but it was kind of one way to kind of compensate. And for them too, that was even worse because they were 8 to 5. So like I was up even earlier, like, and then just not, I'm really a morning person. I think part of like to reconcile those kind of things is the fact that even though people say they work 9 to 5 and they, let's say they go into an office 9 to 5, no one's actually working. Honestly,
Yeah.
people are working maybe max 4 hours out of that time, if they're going to be honest. Because all they do is they call meetings. So there's part, an hour at lunch, there's your 2 15-minute breaks, and there's bathroom time. People are scheduling other things. They're organizing parties for their kids. It's true. They're still on social media. They're doing all sorts of other stuff. Then they get up, but they have a coffee, and they go talk to somebody. Or then, oh, somebody brought in donuts. Okay, everybody, let's go to the calf. And everybody goes to the calf. And that's another 10, 15 minutes gone again. And just, walking around real slowly. They go to the supply room, they get a photocopy, or they get like a pen, and they come back, and then they sit down. But they're like, everybody like pretends and they look really busy. But then they call a meeting, and the meeting, they don't get anything accomplished. Of course, when you're in the meeting, you can't do any other work, but they just call tons of meetings. All that said, like, I think people need to like be a little bit gentler with themselves. I think the autistic me is like, went in with the idea, well, if we're going 9 to 5, that means we're working 9 to 5, and we're going to work from
Yeah,
9 to
100%.
break, and then from break to lunch, and then work through lunch even, and then after that,
What's lunch? Who? Why would I even think about lunch? That
That's
idea
right.
won't
I
even
haven't
come into
eaten
my
my pens
head.
because I forgot.
Yeah.
It's like, and we work like workhorses is kind of nuts, The thing is that I work best in those kind of spurts. I work great. If I have 2 hours of focused work, I get it all done and it's fantastic. But the office is rarely a place where I can do that. And so realistically, and I did all my business stuff, my business plan, I've been doing my hours and checking things out. And yeah, I work max 4 to 5 hours a day, 4 days a week. I don't work Fridays. That's one of my boundaries. Although now I have a temporary meeting that has been booked on Fridays because it's the only day that was available. But anyway, I digress. It's for a short term. Those kind of things. So, but in the end, like, do I work maybe two? Maybe I have 4 to 5 available if there's no interruptions, if kids aren't running around. But I mean, honestly, I probably work about 2 hours a day, about 4 days a week. Yeah. And the funny thing is that running my own business and doing it my way, I actually make almost the same salary I was making when I was working 40 hours a week going into an office for someone else. So to me, that kind of just shows you it's not the amount of hours that you're working have nothing to do with what your salary or what you're worth or the value that you're bringing. And I think people have gotten lost along the way. And businesses kind of, they feel good to have like an office filled with people who are, yes, that person's definitely working hard. We've got all these people working 40 hours a week. Here they are, they're sitting in their seats. Everything's warm, but not realizing that has nothing to do with productivity and that has nothing to do with output. The realistic output is much, much less than that.
Seems like the employment world, the adult world, is just basically an extension of school, where it's just like attendance is it like you get in trouble if you don't have a certain attendance
Yeah.
percentage, or
No, that's it.
all these things that are inconsequential to quote unquote productivity.
The actual value, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, school's training you for work. That's all it is, really.
Yeah. It's just, yeah. Yeah, 9 to 5 seem, well, first of all, if I did 9 to 5 at a location, in one location, which I don't know how anyone goes to one place any Monday through Friday and does that, but regardless of the environment, donuts every day would be required. I would take lots of bathroom breaks. Some of them I would really go to the bathroom, and other times it would be to get away from people if they had access to communicating with me with spoken language, those things. Lunch, I would definitely avoid any human contact at that point because it's just like too much is going on there. I guess I would make accommodations for myself in those
Yeah, I mean, you kind of
situations.
have to. I used to get up and take a walk. I used to walk around the building at my break. I was by myself. No one else joined me, although I don't think I invited anybody else, but it wasn't something that other people did. Like, I felt like I had to get out and have fresh air, feel
Right.
the warmth of the sun on my body. Like, those kind of things. Whereas,
Yeah.
like, you go back, you're in like heavy air conditioning, it's very cold, and then you go out in the heat, and then you come back. And, but I mean, I had some friends. We spent a whole lot of the day texting and sending, Instagram memes back and forth to each other all day and making each other laugh in between working and then going to meetings. But that's kind of how I accommodated myself. But I don't think now, again, the lifestyle that I have now, the lifestyle I've created for myself, the fact that I know this works, the fact that I know that the 9 to 5 exhausts me so much and it only seems to be getting worse as I get older. I would, something financially would have to be very dire for me to have to go back to that. I don't see how I could, and I couldn't do it for long. I would burn out. I would have a mental health crisis or something. I couldn't do that. I don't know.
It takes me a while just to even like wake up and like I don't like to be able to like get dressed and get in my car and go somewhere and be there by 9 o'clock. That just doesn't seem like I could do that for a very long period of time, regardless of the 8 hour schedule or not. That would be another big factor for me.
Yeah, I can get up and get out. It's the regulating myself all day long and putting on that face, like that mask. I'm friendly and approachable, and I don't always just mangle conversations. Yeah, I mean, the week was interesting because it was a training I wanted to do. It was something I definitely wanted to do, and it was with interesting people, and that was great. So, I mean, it's not the fault of any of them. It's the I just don't have the capacity to do that all day. And I wouldn't be comfortable. I wouldn't be happy. I'd be drained.
Definitely. This is a much, much better life for me. Talking on Zoom for sure. But limiting my, I have to do stuff in the community sometimes. But yes, definitely limiting those things. Anything else, Kelly, that you wanted to talk about on this episode?
I could ask you, like, so how many hours a week do you realistically work?
Realistically, well, on every Monday, I'm working from my office at home. So, but there's a few days I'm out in the community, and I always limit that to about 2 to 3 hours, try to make that the max. Otherwise, I start to really get drained. So probably realistically, I'm still doing probably 40 hours over 6 days a week, but it's a lot less than it used to be. I won't tell you how many I used to be and how inefficient it was as well. So, yeah, so I am probably still doing 40 hours and hoping to be down to 25 to 30 hours in the next year or two. I think my overall mental health would be a lot better off for that. So like in the last couple of years, I hired an assistant that's been super helpful, and I have a website administrator, and that's been helpful and helped with a lot of the processes. So I'm definitely doing a lot less stuff than I was, but still I'm doing too much stuff, and I feel that still. My body feels that, and my mind feels that as well. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at right now. I was just going to say, I need to continue to learn from you and maybe be down to less than 40 hours. I think I'll be better
Yes.
off.
I think the next topic we should talk about is probably autistic entrepreneurship. That's my other thing that is like super top of mind for me. And that's something that's like one of my passions as well, is kind of getting more people into entrepreneurship. But again, doing it that self-care way, accommodating ourselves,
For sure.
doing what's best for us, standing up for ourselves, boundaries.
Yeah, definitely we'll be talking about boundaries. That's what we should talk about the next time, next one of these discussions occurs. So episode 6 will be all about autistic entrepreneurship. So look forward to that. And thanks everyone for listening. We will have an interview on our next episode, and it's going to be a wonderful interview. I'm very excited about it. But so join us next time, and I don't think you'll want to miss it.